Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The nationwide protests over racial inequity have been seen as a historic turning point in our national consciousness. Political, business, and cultural leaders have lent their support to the movement for equity. But beyond the recognition of the issue and the apparent desire for change, the path forward remains unclear. And for Dominique Samari, co-owner of P3 Development Group, that change needs to happen on an individual level before we can have lasting social change. As a part of her work with P3, Samari finds solutions for organizations that are trying to create a more equitable and inclusive space. While she admits that the work is difficult, she believes the cultural impact is worth it. Samari wrote about her work and her advice in a piece featured in this month's Milwaukee Magazine, and she joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about it.
Your article talks a lot about how this moment has been conflicting for you emotionally. Can you unpack that a bit? What has this, you know, really incredible and historic moment felt like for you personally?
Personally for me, it's been difficult in a number of ways. So it's, of course, not just the heightened visibility around the topic of racial injustice, specifically the oppression and death of Black men and Black people at the hands of the police, but it's also that we're in the middle of a pandemic. And so emotionally, I think I, like others, are just in a really tricky space right now. And when you start to add all of these pieces and layer these pieces one on top of each other, it becomes a little complicated. I think while I am happy to see that there's starting to be a national focus and national conversation around race and racial inequities, I'm also, I think, disheartened by, in large part, by the approaches that I see to this moment, and that it's taken us this long and taken something like a death on video at the hands of police to really get people to wake up. It's not as though these things are new, but it really did take for someone or many people to see this on video to really say, oh, wait, we may have a problem here.
Well, and as you alluded to, unfortunately, this isn't the first time that we've seen someone die on camera. This isn't the first time that people have witnessed this. What do you think it is about this movement in the middle of a lot of different things culminating all at once? What do you think it is about this movement that's pushed it a little farther than what we've seen previously?
So I can't be altogether certain, but I think, again, it's the combination of things. So I think people, because of the pandemic, maybe had a heightened emotional connection to seeing the death. I think that there's more time and space in our lives now because we're not able to move as freely through the world, and the level of busyness has been, at least for most that I know, significantly reduced, that there's more time to sit in a place of reflection around these issues. I think it's a number of factors. And I think, you know, at some point you do just get to a tipping point where enough becomes enough, where it's just one too many, and it kind of leads to a spilling over, if you will, like what we've seen over the summer.
Yeah. Something you brought up in your first answer was you're concerned about the approach to this conversation. And I think we've all seen these many conversations go in a variety of different ways. When we look back at civil rights movements, we tend to think that it was this one kind of consolidated thing. But of course, experiencing it as we are right now, you see that there are so many things happening all at once. What is it that concerns you about some of the approaches that you're seeing?
My concern rests in the leap to action. And so what I think that does is, number one, it removes the individual's understanding of their role in the problem. And then it reinforces this idea that the problem lies with the other. And so it lies with other white people, the bad white people, or it lies with the people that you think you're trying to help, Black and brown people. And for me, this work really requires that we start with ourselves. And when I say we, I'm not talking about me specifically. I mean, white people specifically need to start with themselves. Because if you think you start doing things outside of yourself, and if you think you're here to save Black and brown people, or that it's these other white people, then you can't see the way in which you are already causing harm, and you can't do anything about the harm that you're causing. And part of that, I think, is because we've kind of set up this superficial binary understanding of what this all looks like. And so for many people, racist people equal bad people, and not racist people equal good people. And people want to be a good person, so they don't want to be associated with racism. But if you can't see yourself as part of the problem, then you absolutely can't be part of the solution. So I know a lot of people struggle with privilege. And so as a child, and I know for many people of color that we were told that you have to work twice as hard, or that you were told how to behave around white people or how to be in different spaces. But I think as white people who are struggling to acknowledge their privilege, if they can try to explore how that was shaped for them. So were they ever told that their whiteness would work against them, or were they ever told that they would have to work harder to compensate for a racial difference? Or was it that the color of your skin was never discussed because it didn't have anything to do with what you would be able to do in this world and how you would be treated? I heard someone use a great example just to show, for those, again, who struggle with privilege, how it comes up maybe in ways that you don't consider. So they asked the audience to consider, if you were on a dark road, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, you're speeding, and you see red and blue lights pulling up behind you. And in that moment, you have the opportunity to choose whatever race you would want to be in the world. Then which race would you choose to be at that moment? And that really brought it home for me, and I think for a couple of other people that I was watching that were in this audience. It happens in these invisible ways that we don't really think about, but that do show up in our lives.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we're looking at these issues, racism, racial inequities, they're so ingrained in our culture that they can be hard for a lot of people to recognize. It's explaining water to a fish.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle these conversations with people who really can't see their own biases?
So this is really, I think, where the work begins. What I work on with clients that I coach formally and friends and colleagues that I coach informally is that we have to get to a shared sense of reality in order to address these inequities. And the fact is that we live in a white supremacy culture. And because white people have not had to spend a lot of time thinking about race, even the articulation of that causes some emotional reaction. So I imagine that there are listeners right now that had a reaction to what I just shared. And that is where I would ask people to begin the work. But the fact is that we live in a culture based upon the belief that white people are superior in many ways to other races, and that therefore white people should dominate other races. And it's not just an attitude or a way of thinking, but it also extends to how systems and institutions are structured to uphold this, right? And my thought is that because systems and institutions are held in place by and created by individuals, that that's where the work must begin. So we have to get to that shared understanding. And it's not about blaming. It's not about right or wrong. It's just about an acknowledgement of reality. And so I don't really want people to think that I think that they're walking around consciously thinking, you know what, I'm superior to other people. What I'm saying is that this white supremacy culture has been in place since you existed. Everything around you is here to serve you and reinforce that. And I'm asking you to do the work of looking at how that shows up in your life and how it has shaped your opinions, beliefs, your patterns, your actions. This is deeply rooted. Most of this is not conscious to like your thinking, but that's where the work must begin. It must begin at really taking a look at what the world really is and how you show up in this world. I think one of the important things to remember is that for many white people, that this is a very new conversation and that they've not had the benefit of having to ever really think very deeply about race or their own whiteness or what that means. And so as they start to explore this work and figure out what it's going to take for their own journey, that there will be feelings of shame and fear, and there will be defensiveness, and that is to be expected. So I think part of being able to move past those feelings and move through the work is anticipating that that's normal, and that will come up, and knowing that those are kind of triggering that you're on the right path, but you can't stay in that place. You should use those instead to explore like why that's coming up for you.
Well, and so much of your piece deals with how we can grow personally in order to grow culturally. So what are the different pieces of advice that you have for people who might be open to understanding more about their biases but aren't quite sure how to work on them?
So that's a great question. I wrote an article a while ago, and after I wrote that article, I had conversations with friends and colleagues afterward. I referenced a practice around equity and inclusion that people needed to engage in. And I think that's what it is. So there isn't a thing that you do, but it really is about a practice. And for me, again, and I know I've said this before, but it starts with you. It starts with asking yourself some really hard questions and seeing what comes up for you. And so I imagine in topics of race or when race is being discussed or when people start to explore what their journey or path is going to look like, they'll have a number of thoughts and emotions that come up. I always encourage people to stay in the question. And so as you move through the world, ask yourself, when do I react this way? When do I have thoughts or feelings that come up for me that aren't in alignment with how I think about myself? How do specific aspects of white supremacy show up for me? How does feeling or thinking this way benefit me? Why do I feel this way? Why do I believe this? Why do I think this is true? Kind of going back to your last question, it is much like a fish in the sea. And so much of this is invisible. And the first step is getting the awareness and bringing yourself into the awareness that allows you to see reality and starting to question some of the assumptions that you may have been making throughout your life. And so just start asking yourself the questions and see what comes up for you. And I think as you start to see the world for what it is and how it has shaped you and how you show up in this world, then you can start to look at, okay, what does this mean that I can do differently? How can I show up differently? How can I get clear about how this is showing up for me as opposed to others? And then you can start to shift some of your actions. I think what I've seen and what I'm not interested in is folks that have not done this work about identifying how white supremacy culture impacts them and how they lend themselves to it and benefit from it, but are in a rush to start a program or figure out how they can help or any number of things that leap right to action. I think in doing that you skip over the hard work, and it actually is a detriment as opposed to the benefit. I tell and had this conversation earlier this morning with a friend and colleague that, you know, if the work doesn't feel challenging and difficult, you're probably not doing it right.
Yeah. A quote that you use in your Milwaukee Magazine article to illustrate this point is, I believe, from Albert Einstein. We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we use to create them. How do you see us avoiding that trap culturally? Is it through this kind of person-to-person work, or are there larger systemic solutions that you see?
So I think it's both and. I think it has to start with the individual because, again, we are the individuals that make up the system. And so it does not occur to me as helpful to have someone who still has not explored their underlying racist beliefs then begin to try to redesign a system that they think will benefit me. That doesn't occur to me as helpful. So I think the work does, for white people, need to begin at an individual level. And then I think in partnership, you move into the work around systems change. I think people of color need to take the lead on systems change. And so the infrastructure part, the people that have been dealing with race forever, since the inception of this country for their entire lives, these are the experts. And they need to be the ones taking the lead in guiding systems and structure change. It's not easy, but I think that's what it requires.
When you think about the future of the movement that we're experiencing right now, what are your fears and what are your hopes?
My fear is that we'll fast forward 10 years and nothing will have changed and people will be convinced that they tried and throw their hands up in the air wondering why nothing worked. My highest hope is that there will be enough people that are now truly committed to the work to do the really deep personal exploration that real transformation requires, and that they will then influence their friends, families, colleagues, and it will start to ripple into real change inside of our systems and impact positively the lives of Black and Brown people.
Dominique Samari is the co-owner of P3 Development Group, and her piece about racial change was featured in this month's Milwaukee Magazine. Samari spoke with Lake Fextoy Powers.